Welcome to the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin. Joining me is Heiko Wimmen, Project Director for Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq for the International Crisis Group, a conflict resolution and prevention organization. Lebanon seems to be falling apart economically and socially, and perhaps in other ways too. Let's start with the economy. Why the huge foreign debt? Why is the country so often on the brink of default? The International Monetary Fund is now offering a way out, but it means tough love. Can Lebanese policymakers bite the bullet?
Lebanon's economic problems have one twin reason, and that is that the country consumes much, much more than what it produces, and that the government spends much more money than what it takes in as revenue. To fill that gap, Lebanon has always needed inflows of money from the outside. For a long time, the huge, huge Lebanese diaspora, often affluent diaspora, has provided this money. But also they've always attracted depositors from outside, and increasingly and over time, this was only possible with offering high interest rates that were at some point completely unsustainable. And it was essentially a Ponzi scheme whereby you would pay off the old debt with new debt. Now, obviously, that couldn't go on forever. And since the central bank has engaged in more and more extravagant maneuvers, they themselves called that financial engineering. And obviously, that had to come to an end, and to a painful end. And this is where we are now. The International Monetary Fund will help, hopefully, to get control of the balance of payments and restore some balance to the budget. It will require adjustments from Lebanese policymakers. That in itself is perhaps possible. I mean, if we think about devaluating the currency, if we think about upping VAT, if we think about improving revenue collection, those things that the IMF will demand before they would release any money, I think are feasible. But the issue is, of course, that the Lebanese in general, the population will have to adjust to a much, much more modest standard of living. They have to import much less, and that is going to be a very hard sell, and we are going to have also very strong social impacts since simply a lot of businesses that were profitable and they could flourish in the past environment when money came in will no longer be able to do so. What Lebanon will also need is a new economic model. The old model was built to a large extent around these capital inflows that I mentioned, in particular a highly speculative real estate sector. And we will now have to move from a consumptive to a productive economy. And that is, of course, not an easy feat. It's especially difficult if the country has no capital to invest, since a lot of the savings of the Lebanese have disappeared in the financial sector that is now completely bankrupt. It is difficult when the infrastructure is so dilapidated from years of neglect. And it's going to be even more difficult in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemics, when obviously money will be in short supplies everywhere around the world.
You are listening to Heiko Wimmen, Project Director for Lebanon, Syria, and Iraq for the International Crisis Group, a conflict resolution and prevention organization. Lebanon's protest movement was born of disgust over yet another new tax, but has since morphed into expressions of disgust over wider charges of government corruption and ineptitude. The chief culprit seems to be old-time sectarianism. What do the protesters want? Can the system be changed?
The protest was really against the existing political elite that has ruled the country essentially since the end of the Civil War in 1990, for roughly 30 years. Sectarianism that you mention is often highlighted because It's the most visible aspect of the political system. It's the most odd one, and the one that is most striking or strange, especially to foreign observers. In reality, I would think, and many Lebanese think that too in their analysis, that while sectarianism is bad and unpleasant, the real problem is corruption and clientelism. And that's what makes the system so difficult to change. It means that these politicians will not only have to find a new economic model, but they will also have to find a new political model. A political player occupies a space somewhere in government, and that enables this party, this player, to get hold of resources, public resources, and then essentially redistribute these resources to his followers and receive political support and votes in return. That's the basic feature of the system, and it creates, of course, huge inequalities. The closer you sit to these people, the more you get from that cake, and for the people at the bottom, of course, there are only crumbs left. But for the crumbs, they still have to go and vote for those leaders. It also creates enormous inefficiencies, simply because if I build a school here or a power plant there, then I also have to build a school and a power plant in this and that place, whether or hospitals or what have you, whether you need them or not. And that system is extremely difficult to change, because the ones who are now in control of it are obviously not going to pull the carpet out from under their own feet. It also means that at the end of the day, even the people who go protest in the street and are disgusted, time and again have to rely on the system, have to use sectarian affiliation, relatives, networks of influence and what have you, to simply get what they need, to get their right as a citizen. So everybody, in the end, everybody is involved, everybody is compromised or complicit to some extent. That doesn't, of course, excuse the leaders, but it means it makes it very difficult to get out of it, and it makes it also very difficult for new political contenders once there are elections. We could think of parties who come out of this protest movement. It makes it very difficult for them to enter the system and to do changes, because the voters will have to be convinced that these new players can give them the same benefits as the old ones did. But these new players come with the explicit objective to not play this game, to not be part of it or to end this game. And of course, they come with no guarantee that they really make it in. So you have a good chance that the vote you give to them is just a wasted vote, that then the political party will see that this or that neighborhood, this or that block even, residential block, has not voted for them or not has not produced enough support for them. And hence, once you come and you need something from your local leader, they'll make you understand that you voted wrongly the last time, and they make you pay for it. And this makes change very, very difficult to achieve.
Heiko Wimmen, thank you for joining me at the Media Line. I'm Lawrence Rifkin.